When I started at St. Luke's, the church I served before I came here, I had been called right out of seminary. It was a large church, a rector and three associates, but all of the associates had taken other jobs in the past few months, and I was the first priest hired to replace any of them. I had been called and moved up midsummer, just in time to spend a week settling in before the rector took his well-needed vacation for the whole month of August. The day I'm remembering was a Thursday afternoon because I was working at my desk trying to get bulletins proofread and my sermon done so that I could go home at a reasonable time before my day off on Friday. My office was on the second floor, and I got a call from the receptionist saying there was someone at the front desk asking to see a priest, and I was the only one there at the moment. I knew, because she didn't tell me a name, that they weren't a parishioner, but someone who simply wanted help from the church. It's worth mentioning at this point that St. Luke's had started a social services agency called Person to Person in the late 60s. It was still housed on campus just across the parking lot and had grown to having donations of more than $3 million a year that it gave away in food, clothes, utility assistance. So many of our requests for assistance we simply sent across the parking lot to get help there. And when I came down to greet this gentleman, that's the first thing I suggested because I was pressed for time. He informed me that he had already done that, but had been turned away because of where he lived. It was in the charter to person that they could only serve people within the zip codes of the actual parish geography, and he lived up the interstate, just outside of that area. He asked if he could have just a few minutes of my time to tell me his story and see if I could help him. I knew this would be a long ordeal. I could just sense in my bones that this story was not of the few minutes variety. But I thought about it and brought him on up to my office. He started telling me about how he had lost his job because his wife was sick, and they were staying in one of those extended stay hotels, and his daughter needed things for school. He told me he had this grand plan to get his commercial driver's license, get a job, and how all these other pieces would fall into place if he could just get the help he needed right now. It sounded almost comical in its grandiosity, but I just nodded along. He peppered in at various times stories of his faith and how God would provide, and he knew God would send good Christian folks to care for him, and the church's mission was to help people as though they were Christ himself in their midst. And I thought that last part was a little heavy-handed, but it didn't matter, because more than anything, I wanted to get him out of my office so I could finish the work that I needed to do. So I wrote him a check for my discretionary account for what he needed, walked him downstairs, gave him an emergency bag of food from our church pantry, and sent him on his way, or so I thought. A few minutes later, he was back at my office door. There was a hurricane forecast for that weekend, and the rain had just begun moving in. And he told me that he had hitchhiked and walked to get to the church, from a different zip code, but he was afraid to try and get home like that. Was there any way I could drive him to the train station and buy him a ticket to get home? I took a deep breath, said, sure. And I drove him about a mile up the street to the station, walked with him to get his ticket. And as I was about to say goodbye, he looked at the Chinese restaurant at the station and said how nice it would be if he could bring his sick wife home a hot meal, because they wouldn't have an easy way to cook any of the things I had given him in the bag of emergency food. So we walked over there and ordered him some food. And as we waited for it to come, I handed him one of the fortune cookies on the counter. He took it and broke it open in his hand, then looked at me and started to cry. And he thanked me and told me he felt like God was there letting him know that it would be okay. And I thought, sure, and paid the bill and left. 3 summers later, I get a page in my office asking me to come down to the front desk because there was someone there to see me. When I walk down, I see this same gentleman standing there. As I walk up, he pulls out his wallet and shows me his CDL. He says, "I got my license. I was making a delivery to the church today and realized where I was and had to come in and tell you. My wife's doing better, working part-time. My daughter's doing well in school. And we got our own place. I just wanted to say thanks for taking time for me that day. I've got to go because I don't want to get behind on my schedule of deliveries. But thank you for seeing me as worthwhile." In our gospel passage on the road to Emmaus, these 2 disciples were going back to their home after traveling to Jerusalem for the Passover feast. Their mood was quiet and reflective, even sad, the story says. When the new traveler joined and wanted to walk with them. What's interesting is that they not only knew about Jesus' death, but had heard firsthand from reliable sources that he had risen from the dead. But they failed to see how that affected their daily lives. They were going back to simply carry on with their day-to-day activities, and they were completely unprepared to encounter Jesus, the risen Lord, in their midst. They don't recognize him, even as he somewhat patronizingly tells them how they should understand the scriptures. But still, they go the extra mile and ask him to stay and have dinner with them. It's when he breaks bread with them that they then realize they had had a conversation for the ages, an encounter with eternity. Then they know that God is in their midst, and that mundane moment has eternal significance. And like a flash, it's gone. They had heard of the resurrection, but until that moment, it wasn't real and meaningful to them yet. They didn't know its full weight and importance. It had to break into their normal reality and turn their work and their walk into a Bible story and their meal into a Eucharist. This guy in my story, Daryl, I think his name was not important because his story worked out. He was important because he taught me what ministry really was. Not the great list of things that have to get done, but the moment when an overlooked man, a nuisance that breaks into my busyness, taught me what truly mattered and carried eternal significance. I had met Christ in my daily life. It wasn't that his story had a happy ending. It was that he said, "Thanks because you listened to me and made me feel like I was worthwhile." He was the Christ, and I nearly showed him the door. I had encountered resurrection in my life because I made space for it, even unknowingly and begrudgingly. And from then on, I saw it a little bit differently. Resurrection was already going on all around me if I was willing to make the time and the space to listen and to see it. Rowan Williams, the last Archbishop of Canterbury, says that his whole ministry was built around the notion of trying to find Christ in the strangers he met along the way. He didn't know what Christ looked like, and so he could be anyone, and he had to enter every encounter to see if it was true, if each relationship would make tangible the resurrection reality for him. This is how we overcome the tyranny of the mundane, the life of moments passing away without any eternal significance or greater meaning. It's how we can tie moments of our lives to the eternal presence of God. We go about our lives doing the ordinary things we do, but we have to be willing to open our eyes and see Christ walking among us, making the reality of resurrection accessible in our midst. It could be the kid you coach who's annoying because he's no good and he drags your team down. But you have patience with him and make him feel valuable when no other adult in his life has made him feel that way. The significance isn't that he grows up to be some great sports player. It's not even realistic. It's that at the ice cream party at the end of the season, he tells you he feels valued, maybe even lovable. It's the older patient, as you do your rounds in the hospital, who keeps hitting the call button, but not for any good reason. But you keep going back, even though there's nothing really you can do for her. And you listen to her each time, and it doesn't change her diagnosis one bit, but it makes her feel less alone. And that was her fear all along. And in her smile and the measure of peace it brings, you know the value of those interactions. It's the annoying coworker who is always telling you the best way to do everything because he knows. And one day, while you're grabbing a coffee break, he tells you about how his wife has been sick and they're swimming in debt. And you realize that this is the only area of his life like he feels like he's in control of or can contribute to. And he thanks you for being his friend, even though you hadn't really thought of yourself that way. We all know the story of the resurrection. Believe God is with us, and even promise to seek and serve Christ in every person. But so often we are so busy with our day-to-day existence, distracted by our own troubles, head down and doing our normal tasks, that we miss the opportunity to encounter Jesus right in our midst. Our eyes must be open to the reality of Easter in our world. Jesus is alive and active and comes to us when we least expect it, breaking in when we are preoccupied with other things, demanding more than we want to give, not because he needs it, but because he needs us to stop long enough to see the possibility of eternal significance in our mundane lives. We don't know what the Christ will look like when he shows up in our lives. That's why we must spend these 50 days of Easter hearing the stories and practicing seeing the resurrection. As we prayed in our opening collect today, open our eyes of our faith that we may behold him in all his redeeming work. Then we must go out and be willing to make the space and time for those encounters of eternal significance, to break in and let us know the reality of the resurrection in the here and now, every day in our very midst. Amen.